You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
That's probably one of the lessons that we amateur players at the LGS can learn from pros.
Give them just a half an inch of room, they're going to combo off on you.
The originator, the progenitor.
Pretty awesome to be able to say, well, Brian, you already lost.
And insert your own favorite noise for failure here.
The stars are aligned right now for him to win it.
What the heck are we doing?
And that's when your goblin comes out.
See, I don't consider that fun.
Oh, you brave soul, will you have a rival or will you stand alone? Well, you can always stand with us here on TryHards, whether you're in or out of this weekend's Pro Tour. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. Together, we're the TryHards. Thank you for spending your time with us. This week, we'll cover the Pro Tour. It's a Pro Tour Pick'em edition of TryHards. Yes, bragging rights are on the line again, and since the crownless are king, we'll have a whole new way to talk about our breakdown here on this episode of TryHards. We'll get to this weekend's both limited and team trios formats and 25 years. How do you approach that status? We'll kick it around on this episode of TryHards. We get it started each week with what are you drinking? I'm excited about this one. Just down the river in Edwardsville, Illinois, there is, I believe, a relatively new brew company called Recess Brewing. You know, the best part when you were in grade school, they have the bomber of the old man barrel aged ale, and they barrel aged it in Matt Buffalo Trace barrels.
Ooh,
so, yes, wow. This is delicious. And after the last couple of days I had, I deserved a treat. So we're leading off with the old man here in Command Central. Matt, what are you drinking?
I made something special last night, and we didn't end up recording, so I made it again tonight, and it's a Kentucky Mule. I didn't have the fresh mint to put on top, but I had everything else, and boy, is it good.
Brian, what do you have in Galesburg?
There couldn't be a better name for a beer that you're drinking right now that's got Old Man in the title. Kudos to that. I went the Hurley route this week. I couldn't let the zombie dust stay in the fridge anymore, so I polished that off. But when I was at Aldi, found something, and you might have had this already, called the Tumwater Brewing Company Whitewater Double IPA. I gotta say, it's really tasty. It's not like that real bitter that you might get out of a normal double IPA, so Aldi comes through yet again.
If only I had an Aldi close by and I could maybe pick some up before I left tomorrow. We'll see what kind of time is allotted and whether or not we're getting a regional distribution that Matt's not. All right, it sounds like there's a mystery afoot for the TryHards to solve. Brian, what magic did you play this week?
You and I jumped on and kind of played a little bit of Legacy just to more test out my new headset that I'm wearing this evening, which I really, really like. Hopefully I'm sounding a little bit better. Yeah, didn't get to play a whole lot. I'm hoping to make it out either tomorrow night. Some of the guys are getting together. I think they want to test some standard and or some other formats. We'll have to wait and see if the week what the weekend's going to hold.
Matt, I know you've been busy with family in town. Did you get to play any Magic?
I pulled a Tibbetts and I did not. I wasn't even able to hop on and do really anything online. I'm going to try to sneak in some maybe this weekend, but they're not leaving till Sunday, so I doubt I will.
Well, I got to play some Magic, so let's talk about what I did.
Woohoo!
I played Modern at my LGS for FNM. I didn't have a Modern deck on me. I was busy all week, so I dialed up a fellow player and said, hey, you usually have a couple extra decks. I'll buy your entry if I can borrow one. And he said, absolutely, let's do it. So he gave me my choice between Goblins and Blue-Black Fairies. And the competitive Magic player in me wanted to play the Fairies deck. It had Ancestral Vision. It had Cryptic Command. It had Bitter Blossom, Spell Stutter Sprite, all those great things. But the tired person in me didn't want to grind out rounds past time. So I played Modern Goblins. It was a lot of fun. Mono red, low to the ground, as you might imagine. Beat a relatively young player who was new and trying to innovate a mono green deck in round one. Got a frustrating matchup in round two against Modern Merfolk. I died with him at 5 in game one when he turned all of my mountains into islands via Spreading Seas, and I had Lethal Burn in my hand. Then in game two, he did the turn 3 Rejury, turn 4 Rejury, triggers on the tap, triple Lord shenanigans that deck's capable of, and just kind of overwhelmed me when I mulliganed in each of those games. Round three, I had the chance to take on a young man who was playing Titan Breach. Got the win in that one, much to my surprise. I thought I'd be a dog there. And then in round four, I got perfected by Kiki Moon in game two. A frustrating situation in game one. After mulliganing, he stabilized at 1 and had the combo. And then in game two, I had him dead to rights on the board. He had to have the perfect 3 in hand of Deceiver Exarch, land to play Kiki, and then Kiki to win, and he had the perfect 3. So he once again won at 1 when I had Lethal Burn in my hand. If I would have gotten to either untap or attack with either of the creatures that I had on the board that turn, because Exarch taps one down and then can block the other one, and I didn't have enough reach in that situation. So it was a fun, different experience to look at the game a little bit differently, to play Modern Goblins. It's not a deck that I think I'm going to be building for myself anytime soon. That brings us up to the action this week. It might feel like you could play Goblins in this current limited format, but they're not one of the tribes of Ixalan. No, instead, they're just part of the Pirate Coalition. We'll figure out whether they were flying high or not. GP Houston saw 889 turnout. Axel Martinez Ocampo on his black-white vampire build in the finals took down Joseph Demestrio, who was on blue-green folk. And then in London, it was 1,976 who turned out for limited. Now, the Pro Tour this weekend is in Europe, so you had a lot of pros there getting in their practice. Marcelino Freeman defeated Steve Rubin. Freeman was on blue-black. Rubin was on green-red. Freeman, I was very impressed. He had to beat the number one seed Seth Manfield in the semis just to get to Steve Rubin in the finals. Very cool top eight, and we'll see much more limited draft as part of the Pro Tour coming up this weekend. Matt, I know you had your eye on part of GP London that was coming from, well, I guess you can't call it the Tower of Power, because even though it was played in the shadow of the Tower of London, there's no power allowed in Pauper. So did Pauper make enough of an impression that it's going to be around for a while?
Yeah, they had over 300 players there. Channel Fireball said they're going to extend out the initial time that they're going to try Pauper. Pauper looks like it's very popular. You're starting to get the normal complaints from Magic players of, well, Pauper's too expensive now, so I know it's doing well.
The only card I have to point out for that is Obulette. It's a Pauper card. Why is my black removal 3-drop $50-something?
That one's a little pricey, but Professor was even talking about, hey, what's the possibility of them just making some kind of tier 2 decks, pre-made decks, and selling them for $30? There's nothing that says you can't reprint any of these cards. None of them are on the reserve list.
We'll see how this goes going forward. Pauper seems to be around to stay, as it has been a popular pick for players who have turned out for these GPs early run by Channel Fireball. Brian, you played a lot of limited in your time, and you excelled in both recent limited formats, Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, when you had a chance at the LGS. What did you learn watching this weekend and playing in those formats that you're looking for this weekend during drafts at the Pro Tour?
The drafts are going to be pretty linear. I think people are going to have to get a bit lucky to, if they start to draft something and they're able to stay in that, whether it be vampires, whether it be dinos, I think that's going to be the key. I think the kind of mashup, like what I did with the Rivals pre-release, where I kind of put together an Esper pirate vampire something or other, that was actually a really good deck. I don't think it's going to have enough power. I think you're going to have to go with one of those linear things. Merfolk could be really, really strong. I've seen some of those decks out there, and man, it seems like no one's hate drafting. They're sticking with their tribe and just trying to, you know, get as much value and just squeeze as much value out of that as they possibly can. So if somebody can put together one of those really, really nuts black vampires or a white black vampires list, or maybe a blue green merfolk list, I think that's going to be what takes it down.
You mentioned hate drafting. Very popular with the amateur crowd very unpopular with pros. And I think that's part of the reason that we see more powerful decks at the end of GPs and on pro tours, is that higher level players understand that it's more powerful for you to have a better deck than it is to possibly take something away from an opponent that you may not face while lowering the power level of your own deck. That seems to be one of the great dividing lines between high-level players and amateur players that you'll find in the LGS.
I think that's true, and I think that's probably one of the lessons that we amateur players at the LGS can learn from pros, is hate drafting seems like it's a good play, but in the short run, that might happen. But in the long run, you're just hurting yourself. You're denying yourself some cards that you could have played in your pool that otherwise is just kind of sitting there, and you're smirking to yourself thinking, ha, I kept that guy off of something. That's not always going to be the best way to do things. So I think it's fascinating to kind of get into the head of the pros and to think they might even know what, you know, 3, 4, 5 of the other players at the table are on just by what's coming around the table. That's the knowledge that they want. They're going to go with their tribe. They're going to go with their archetype.
Matt, just an eyelash short of 3,000 players turned out to play limited over the weekend. Is it fair to say that Wizards has crafted a limited environment that people are loving?
I think that people do like it, but I definitely think there's some flaws in it. I did get to watch a draft in person Friday night. To be honest, I'm glad I didn't play, because it was an 11-person pod. It was one of those. And I noticed the people that had the bombs, that had the really synergistic decks that looked really good, were kind of on a knife's edge because their format was really bomb heavy. So, you know, you mentioned the hate drafting, Brian. It's got its places and it's bad sometimes, but this whole format is very bomb heavy. And I do think that the environment is a good one. I do enjoy drafting this set, and I plan on doing it as much as I possibly can, but I'm not going to appreciate anything that's really, you know, like I have to draft bombs, and if I don't get them, I'm not going to win. And I'm a little bit afraid that that's what's going to happen.
Do you hate draft kind of actively, or do you do it just if something comes around that you're like, I can't believe this card hasn't been taken yet, and I'm going to just keep somebody else off of it? Or is that like a plan you go in with?
No, I don't hate draft actively at all. If I'm in a, especially in this format, if I'm in a, say, blue-green Merfolk, and I see kind of a Vampire Lord in a pack that I have absolutely nothing else to take, or something that I'm not going to play, I'll take it for sure, especially in a smaller pod. I'm with the pros. I don't think it's a good way to draft.
We'll get to watch some of the best players draft this weekend. It starts Friday with draft, as PT Bilbao is about to unfold. It's time to swing up to Philadelphia. Yeah, they're excited about something besides Magic there, what with having one of the two teams in the Super Bowl this weekend. But 329 teams got together. Carson Wentz had free time, but I don't think he quarterbacked any of these teams to a victory. Team trios were the order of the day. Jeremy Henry, Lucas Michaels, and William Lowe on Bug Snake, Dredge, and Turbo Depths, respectively, knocked off Brennan DeCandio on Grixis Energy, Caleb Durward on Bant Spirits, which touched off a whole, and I believe Jerry T brought this up, if Bant Spirits is the ham sandwich, then Caleb Durward is the only one who can play it and have any success with it. And Tannen Grace on Grixis Delver. It was a lot of fun to watch those games unfold. The Standard Classic, 167 players. Aiden Breyer on Mono Red defeated Robert Stanley on Mardu Vehicles. This was interesting to me, Matt. In the Standard Classic, the format which has been strangled by energy, you saw 8 individual decks make up this top 8 of the Classic.
Standard still is trying to figure out where they stand as far as the, you know, what decks are good, what decks aren't good. I have my own personal opinions. I'm not sure that the tribal decks are actually good enough. I've been playing them pretty actively. This week was an exception, but I don't think that the tribal decks are good enough to really take it down in Standard. But a lot of the tokens decks are popular, and those would not have been popular without Ferocidon ban. It's going to be interesting. There just hasn't been a really high-profile tournament that's just Standard is played in to really say, okay, this is the best or the worst deck.
In Modern, 325 players came out. It was the most popular Classic of the weekend, and I'm not surprised by that, with the Pro Tour being Modern this weekend. Ross Merriam on Humids took down Tom Medvec on Goryeo's As Foretold. One of my biggest problems with Modern, Brian, is that I haven't found a deck that I can really latch onto, but I think we might be there.
Goryeo's As Foretold.
Put some amazing tech in a blender And this is what came out of it. Essentially, it has some of the DNA of Kiki Moon. It has a lot of the DNA of the Goryeo's Vengeance Gristle brand decks that are looking to abuse that. You can through the breach some things. You can abuse As Foretold. And it's taken the As Foretold Living End combo and kind of mashed everything together in a very efficient package. This has me intrigued. Do you think this might shake up Modern a little bit? And are we going to get to see some of this kind of brewing at the Pro Tour this weekend? Because that's what has me excited about the possibilities.
This is such a crazy deck. If someone showed up at the LGS with this deck list, I'm like, well, nice job brewing all these. It's kind of crazy. But the fact that it's Tom Medbeck and he took second at the Classic, you know, says something. You got to kind of sit up and take notice on this. And the raw power can't be denied. I mean, when you're doing Jace Vin's Prodigy, As Foretold, Goryeo's Vengeance, Kiki Jiki, Grizzle Brand, this is all good stuff. Follow that up with some Ancestral Vision, some Faithless Looting, and then, as you said, Sean, Living End. I love it. I love the angles it's taking. It's very weak to a lot of stuff, but at the same time, it doesn't care. It's going to do its thing come hell or high water, and you're not going to be able to stop it every single time. And I love the multifaceted part of this. Whether it's going to make a splash in Modern or we're going to see something like this at the Pro Tour, I have no doubt we're going to see some innovative brews. I don't know if it's going to be as loosey-goosey as this, though.
Matt, you were around during Old Extended when Jerry Thompson unleashed the menace that was Thopter Depths on the world. Am I reaching too far to say this feels a lot like that? Because it can attack from different angles. Three, if I'm reading this deck list correctly, where Thopter Depths really had two that are hard to interact with the same kinds of cards. This deck is explosive, it's powerful, and if it proves to be resilient, this could be something very interesting.
This is the definition of a glass cannon, and I say that because it seems like it would be extremely easy to, you know, take care of this deck, but if you give them just a half an inch of room, they're going to combo off on you. That's where this deck really gets its power. Probably, I wouldn't say it's necessarily a metagame deck, but it's more of a, hey, this is a cool deck, and people will know what's going on with it now.
I think it might have a little bit more staying power than that. We'll see who's proved right if this thing gains traction. Goryeo's As Foretold. Legacy Classic wrapped up the weekend 176. Oliver Tomaszko on Grixis Delver knocked off Charles London on Grixis Delver. Matt got a chance to pull out his party hat because Nick Cummings ended up sixth with Food Chain. Go ahead and dance for it.
I did enjoy seeing the Food Chain. I'm not convinced that it's a good deck right now just because of the way the metagame's shaking out. Probably not going to be playing it our March 20th in St. Louis.
So, Matt, did you look at the list that Nick Cummings was running?
Yes.
22 creatures seems really, really high with Emrakul. This is a bigger list than what you ran in Pittsburgh. Do you think your build is better with kind of your Stiflebird tech and things kind of keeping a little lower to the ground? Or do you like this build that's a little bit larger than I've seen Food Chain before?
I'm not going to call my build, you know, the Stiflebird tech, but I do like the build of mine a little bit better, where it's more of a control-y, mid-rangey deck. This is more of a creature-style deck. I think it's easier to get 2-for-1, 3-for-1, you know, with the creature, the really hardcore creature-style decks, because there's about 4 or 5 different builds of Food Chain overall. They all have their focus, or their good matchups and their bad matchups. I just think the overall one is kind of the best one is the one I play.
We'll see if that tech continues to unfold, as apparently Food Chain is alive and well and open for innovation. All right, I'm always glad to see some of that. Those were the tournaments this weekend. 2 limited GPs and the big celebration in SCG Philly. Guys, we wouldn't be here today if the originator, the progenitor, didn't begin Magic some 25 years ago. This year is going to be a celebration all year long. The return to Dominaria coming up, Pro Tour 25, as in the 25th anniversary coming up in Minneapolis later this year. And the mothership today put together a very cool piece about Magic and all of those little eccentricities that only happen, Brian, when something becomes a cultural icon. And whether it's telling you in total, the total weight of how many Magic cards has ever been printed as how many Marus it is. By the way, I believe it was 512,000 and some change Marus in total weight of cardboard that's been printed. That was one of the more fun stats that they broke out. I think that it says something about the game at 25 years and the place that it's taken in our culture. Maybe that is a petri dish that is geek culture, nerd culture in a way, but in game culture, whether it's casual, whether it's competitive, Magic has proved that it's ascended to some very lofty heights. And while it's not alone there, it's starting to develop its own following, its own mythos, and be treated in a way that you only see with games that reach this level of success.
It's incredible. I can't even begin to imagine 25 years, because I think back to my own life and where I was 25 years ago and all of the different iterations of me that have happened. And if you kind of plan it and map it through the very, very cool graphics that Wizards has put on, I encourage everybody to kind of go onto the mothership and look at the timeline. It's really cool because you can kind of say, oh, well, when this came out, here's what I was doing. And, oh, I remember I was living here when this set was released, et cetera. And, oh, yeah, I remember top eighting my first blank when that came out. And during that set, whatever, you can kind of chart your progress as a Magic player through your life. And you can kind of chart your life through the Magic timeline. And I kind of find myself doing that on a regular basis, for good or for bad. Sometimes I think, you know, I get a little bit too far down the rabbit hole. This game has grown so big, as you said, multifaceted, in such a way that I can't imagine Richard Garfield ever intended. I mean, he designed this game to be played as kind of a time killer in between games of D&D. When your characters weren't doing anything, okay, well, why don't you and I kind of, while this guy does the dungeon crawl, why don't you and I play this game? I mean, that's how he really designed it. And that's fascinating to think that it's now this absolute behemoth. Pro tours, and people are flying all over the world, and we have a pro tour in Spain this weekend. I'm kind of gobsmacked by it. So this is a great kickoff. I'm really looking forward to see what other celebrations we have for the Magic 25 year coming up.
Matt, you're the resident curmudgeon on the Tryhards podcast. When you look at this timeline, do you see anything other than your mental Rolodex of the years in which Wizards screwed up?
I was actually going to talk a little bit about that. You know, they went through it and they didn't explicitly say, oh, yeah, here's where we screwed up, here's where we didn't. But they kind of talked about some of their big, I wouldn't call them their mistakes, but some of their learning, you know, their learning moments, really. It's amazing to see where it's gone or where it started, where it came from. And I was always under the mistaken impression the first time Magic was released was actually at Gen Con. I did not realize it was at Origins Game Fair. Just seeing everything on there, just kind of seeing a quick flash of, you know, quick highlight of, hey, here's what Magic was doing this year. Here's the players we had. Here's some big tournaments, some winners. Looking at some of the winners, too, you know, now are in their 50s. Just seeing that it spans the gender gap. It spans the age gap. And it's really nice to read that. I highly suggest everyone read the whole article and just kind of flash through and say, wow, you know, I saw a quote somewhere. Wow, when I was playing last time or when I quit the game the first time, some of the people who are winning the Pro Tour now are still in diapers.
Congratulations to Wizards. Congratulations to Magic. And a thank you can't be said enough to Richard Garfield. I don't know what you two are doing wherever you're at, but right now I'm holding up my glass of the old man saluting Wizards. Wizards, thank you very much for the 25 years. You've gotten it right more often than you've gotten it wrong. Don't listen to Matt every time he speaks.
That's right.
And that's
you listen to me, you'd be out of business.
That celebration that is going to be going on at Pro Tour 25, we'll have a Pro Tour pick'em for that. But first, we have to contest Rivals of Ixalan this week. Each time a Pro Tour comes up, we have fun with it on Tryhards by each picking three competitors and seeing who can combine their three picks for the lowest total finish. So essentially, golf scoring is what we have. We've done this six times. Brian has three titles. Matt has two. And the crownless finally got his first crown the last time out. I was able to pick up the victory in Ixalan. So I'm going to ride my dinosaur to the front of the line and get the first pick this time around. It'll be me and then Matt and Brian. Brian came in dead last. Matt, it felt good. Felt good. I know you didn't win, but it felt good to come in on top of Brian.
You know, I like to update you guys the scores like as the Pro Tour is going on. And so it was pretty awesome to be able to say, well, Brian, you already lost.
Yeah, it was just awful. It was just an absolute beating.
First off, with it being modern on this Pro Tour, that heavily affected my thinking heading into this. And there were two great minds of Magic that immediately popped up, and I actually wrote down on my list, and insert your own favorite noise for failure here. Unfortunately, Frank Karsten is going to be part of the coverage team, the great Affinity player, and Travis Wu, not going to be at this Pro Tour. So we're going to have to look at other players besides those two as I lead this off this week. For my first pick for Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, I'm going to pick someone who has come to define one particular archetype of the modern format. He is a man of numbers. He is a man from the greatest baseball town in this country. He eats only peanuts and always wears his knit cap. I'm going to take Caleb Shearer playing his Storm deck as the first pick. Matt, who do you have for your first pick?
This is one of those tournaments that, I'm not going to lie, you're hit on the head, John. It's highly, highly dependent upon the format. And modern, I got to say, I'm a big fan of Corey Baumeister. I think he's going to do something. I think that, I hate to say it, but him being Brad Nelson's brother is actually, I think, a really good thing. I think he's going to be able to tap into a couple of different teams. And then him being on Team Genesis, you know, that behemoth that is just Team Genesis as a whole is going to be awesome. And, you know, they've got enough of a connection to other teams that I think they might be able to just weasel a little bit of information out of those guys and metagame the whole field.
Caleb Shearer and Corey Baumeister, the first two picks. Brian, who you taking in your first slot?
I'm glad I was able to stifle my scream of disappointment because I had Baumeister down as my number one. I had no idea in the world that Hurley was going to take Baumeister number one. I had a solid number two in the current world number one, Seth Manfield, who's got some experience with some Tron decks in his day. He's a player who has shown resilience in all kinds of formats. He might be the player who it doesn't really matter what format it's going to be. He's somebody who is just going to gauge this game state, and he's going to do really, really well. So I'm going with Seth Manfield for my first pick.
Okay, that is two quelled screams in a row because I was hoping that he would make it through. I know I was hoping the world number one would slide to my second pick. I realize how ridiculous that sounds, believe me. But I knew Matt would do something off the beaten path. And Brian, I thought you might just take Marcio Carvalho there. So I was hoping that Manfield would come back around to me at number two.
No, the romance has ended with me and Carvalho. I actually wrote him a breakup letter. You can find it somewhere on Reddit, someday. So, yeah.
Maybe if you pledge the top level at Patreon, is that something they can see? We'll see if the breakup letter is actually penned and actually happens. That leaves me with somebody who has made his name with elves in this format before that I think has the tech and he'll have the very relaxed demeanor that wearing basketball shorts for your entire life allows you. I'm going to take Matt Nass as my pick at number two. Matt, who you got?
So here's where I'm going to throw the first first curveball. A player who's very good, a player who chops the grind because he has something to make up for, Yam Wing Chun. And I think he's going to be able to do something really good, especially with some of the teammates that he's going to be playing with. I think he's going to be a good finisher.
He had a good finisher, and it didn't work out. We'll see if Mr. Hazaret can put it back together and
he's
got to
prove himself. And that's why I'm saying he's hungry.
Yeah, I would love to see him do it with Hazaret. This might not be the tournament for that, but I think that would be emotionally a full circle achievement if he can ever do that. Brian, who you have in your number two slot?
I have to tell you guys, I'm going from kind of this range of emotions here, and I think this is what modern brings out in me. There's so many decks you can play, and there's so many different personalities on here. I kind of have to do this. I feel like I cannot stand the archetype that this player represents in the modern part, but I can't deny the skill level of Sam Black. Sam Black is Sam Black, but the way he pilots Lantern Control, you got to respect the skill level there. And so I would feel very ashamed if I let number two slot get out without Sam Black from Team Ultra Pro. So that's what I'm going with.
Okay, you heard me kind of oh-knowing in the background there because I used that exact same mentality where I'm not sure about the archetype that this player is constantly espousing. And much like Black is tied to Lantern control, this player is tied to expensive sorceries and Esper control. He's had huge success on the SCG Tour, and I think he might have the right formula this time around. I'm going to take a flyer. I'm going to take Shaheen Serrani.
I like that pick. Yeah. It's solid.
I like the way he plays the game.
I agree, and I think that he's also I hate to say it's any player's time, but I think that the stars are aligned right now for him to win it.
I like it. Matt's on board with my pick. So, Matt, you obviously don't have a good third pick.
Oh, I have a great third pick because I think that he's going to come with maybe a unique deck or maybe a deck that is standard and just have some unique twist in it, and I think that's Jerry T.
Jerry T is continuously a popular choice on these picks, and he pays it off occasionally, which when you're playing against players at the highest level, expecting a huge run of LSV-style dominance or Marcio Carvalho-style dominance from their heydays, they're the, kind of the modern versions of the German juggernaut and John Finkel, you're not going to get that all the time. But Jerry T, you talked about somebody whose time has come. He has the Pro Tour win now. I think he might be somebody who settles in at that level and continues to put up great results. I like that pick. Brian, your third pick.
We are down to kind of the final pick of our Pro Tour Pick'em, and no one has picked William Huey Jensen. No one has picked Reed Duke. No one has picked BBD, which I think might be a first for all of our Pro Tour Pick'ems up to this point.
I think it's all about the formats. I think you're right, but I think it's the format.
I think you're right, and so I'm going to make this a clean sweep, and I'm going with Brad Nelson. I'm going with Baumeister's brother because I think Nelson, a lot more maybe even than his brother, Hurley, has such a finger on the pulse of this format and has just proven himself. He's not a Pro Tour veteran, I wouldn't say, but he has enough Pro Tour experience now where I think he might be the one who's primed to take something down.
Brian, I have the picks from all of our six previous pick'ems in front of me. And the only time that it has happened where those gentlemen who you were named were not taken was in our very first Pick'em show, and that was Pro Tour Eldritch Moon. So that was the last time that those gentlemen were, that none of them were taken. There have been times where all of them have been taken. Some of them were taken in each of the other five, Pro Tour Eldritch Moon and now Pro Tour Rivals. The only Pick'em shows that we've had where those names you brought up have been shut out of the tryhards,
so
essentially
we might,
top nine.
We might be getting some flame mail from some of our Patreons just wondering what the heck are we doing picking who we picked. But I really do think that these are solid picks for very, very good and different reasons because Modern is a much different beast than just the normal standard and draft format. I think that this is fantastic. These would not be my picks, guys, if Legacy was a Pro Tour format.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
and
totally
I think also
you.
That the SCG grinders, if you want to call them that still, have a huge advantage over some of the traditional pros just because they play this day in and day out.
Yeah, I'm with you because you see a lot of players in the past come from that SCG circuit. Jerry Thompson's a great one. He dominated that tour and then struggled for years at the Pro Tour level. That isn't necessarily the case with this particular format. I think just knowledge of your deck. We talk about it in Legacy all the time, but right now in Modern, I think that's at a premium as well. This weekend's Magic Pro Tour, Bilbao, Spain, Modern will be the constructed format. Draft will go with it each day. All you need is a 4-4 record on day one. Just an aside for that, we don't have to spend a lot of time on this. I think it's much easier to grok as a success if you want to make it easy for the viewer to say you need a winning record on day one to come back on day two. That makes a lot more sense. Okay, yeah, you might need a couple 4-4s to fill out the bracket, but telling everyone that mediocrity, 4-4, gets you an invite back to day two, I don't know if that's the best marketing tool if I'm looking to push it forward. Maybe 5-3 or 4-3-1 or however it works, but a winning record. I think that's one of the things that could be used as a springboard forward to make the day feel more competitive on day one. This year's picks, Pro Tour Rivals of Ixalan, coming up this weekend. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. We're essentially in undiscovered country. So what do you do when you find yourself in that situation? Well, you plant your flag in some unclaimed territory.
The reason I picked this one today is because it has a league promo, which wasn't super popular, but there's a lot of them out there. That's about $4.15 market price. The standard is about $4 market price. Standard foil is about $4.78 market price, but they have a different foiling process. So I'm going to tell you, pick up these Ixalan standard foils at about $4.50 to $5. Because right now it looks like you can actually arbitrage those out to some buy list. So Unclaimed Territory, I really think it's going to be an important card.
This week's In the Elevator, Unclaimed Territory Foils with Matt Hurley here on TryHards. It's time for 3 minutes to brew. The brewmaster has his eye on Spain. Brian, what are you thinking about as we head to this pro tour?
I'm thinking about breaking with a little bit of tradition here and not choosing a card per se to brew with this evening, gentlemen, but instead to think of the format that we were just espousing in Modern. If you, which someday still may happen, were to join the Pro Tour, what would be the Modern deck that you would take? So pretend that you are in Bilbao testing this week. What is the deck that you are testing with this week? Hurley, I want to start with you. If you had your choice to post a winning record to try to win it all, what would it be?
I am really a huge fan of the Mardu Pyromancer decks. I don't necessarily think they're a dog against the Lantern Control decks, because I do think the Lantern Control decks are actually going to be extremely popular there. It goes so wide with such little guys that sometimes it can get around the, you know, the whole Ensnaring Bridge problem that a lot of decks have, you know, Death Shadow being one of them. So I'm a big fan of Mardu Pyromancer. Really good attack angle onto the format as a whole. And I'm just crossing my fingers and hoping that this format is not going to be what I fear it is, where it's just going to be, you know, 5 Lantern Control decks in the top 8.
Sean, what about you? You think Mardu Pyromancer's got what it takes, or you got your eye on something else?
This is a question that is so deeply personal, because it's what are you good with? And you brought up 2 key points. What would you play to win the tournament? So this is going to be my personal opinion, and you put the caveat of win the tournament. If I'm already on the tour and I'm only looking for a solid finish, I think I would go with Jeskai Control, because it has so much game against the entirety of the format, and it lets you solve the problem of the game no matter what your opponent's playing as the game unfolds, and gives you a lot of choices to make on that decision tree. That if I'm looking for a solid finish, I'm going for Jeskai Control. But if I'm looking to spike the tournament, I want to play a deck that gives me raw power. I want to play something that beats the top decks. So in my mind, you got to beat Death Shadow, you've got to beat Titan Shift, and you've got to beat Scape Shift. You can put those two in different camps if you want to. And to me, you have to roll the dice. So this deck just came up tonight, and maybe I don't play it exactly as it is, but I think you have to play something that has a little bit of risk reward to it. If you're going to spike a Pro Tour, no matter how good you are, you have to run hot. And Goryeo's As Foretold gives you that chance to run hot and just blow the field away. So if you're looking for a solid finish, I go Jeskai Control. But if you want to take the chance to either go big or go home, to me, you run something that has a little bit of inherent risk, but an absolute top-end power level. And to me, that's a Goryeo's As Foretold, something along those lines. And I would be working on getting that deck as close to where I wanted it to be if I was looking to win this weekend.
I think those are 2 really, really good picks. And Hurley, you know how close Mardu Pyromancer is to my heart. I think that's just an amazing deck. I cannot wait to kind of trot it out at the next Modern thing that we're going to. Guys, I really think that something in along the line of Jonathan Rossum's Humans deck that he's been running with a lot of regularity and a lot of success lately at the Team Constructed, I think that's the kind of deck that I would want to pilot this weekend with the blue-red Gift Storm that Sean chose Caleb Shearer for as a close second. I feel like the Humans list trots out so many creatures that something like Jeskai Control only has enough answers. You cannot just handle 35-plus creatures on the battlefield at any given moment. So I think that there's got to be that kind of redundancy with that Humans deck. It's very linear. You're not going to get mana screwed. You're not going to get mana flooded. You're always going to have something to play. And those are the simple things, I think, that are going to make that type of deck the winner here at Pro Tour Bilbao.
30-second question to you guys. Say somebody came on the show and they said, hey, guess what? All 3 of you get a honorary invite to Pro Tour. play something fun. And that was their guidance. Quick answer. What would it be? Brian?
Play something fun. I'd definitely play Mardu Pyromancer.
Sean?
Goryeo's As Foretold.
Mine would absolutely be the Mardu Smallpox.
I see. I don't consider that fun. You know, hey,
oh, it's we fun all have for me, our different... but nobody else.
Well, yeah, Matt, much like myself, when I play Pox and Legacy, considers fun a zero sum game at that point. So if you have all of it and your opponent has none, then that's the way the math should actually work out, because there's 100% fun being had at that point. You know, it's a good question, Matt, because sometimes our intentions are different than what our competitive heart desires. And to me, that was kind of the same thing I talked about earlier in the show, the chance to play blue black fairies versus goblins and have fun. And usually I pick that competitive side, but sometimes you just want to have a little fun, and that's when your goblin comes out. That's this week's 3 minutes to brew with a quick follow-up. Great job right on top of it. So guys, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week? For me, I had some extra time. The girl was in the hospital. She had surgery early this week. And you get a lot of time, as I text Brian, I think. I know Matt was working hard. Brian was just teaching. To do Magic theory crafting. He had the iPad, had the Deck Builder app, had the Top Deck app. I had a lot of downtime to sort of work on that. And looking at different avenues, making changes to my Legacy deck in anticipation of going to St. Louis for the Legacy event that we've talked about coming up in March. I know Brian's going. I think Matt's going to get there as well, as the tryhards will converge on the Gateway City. But just the chance to sit down and theory craft a bit, I think was enlightening for me, and it also helped me take my mind away from what was going on. It wasn't serious, so I didn't have a lot of concerns there. But just a chance to think about it as a game, as opposed to a competition that we're internally involved in, was fun for me this week. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Two things really caught my attention this week. The first of was I was trying to find a podcast when I was on a morning run to listen to, and I stumbled across a old episode from like April of last year of Kitchen Table Magic. The episode featured Marshall Sutcliffe. Popped it on and I started listening to it on the run, and I was so into it. It was so great. And I looked down, I'm like, man, it's got to be almost over. No, it was like a 2-hour and 20-minute episode. I was like, holy God, what is going on here? So fascinating to listen to Marshall Sutcliffe kind of talk about his journey into the world of Magic, kind of abandon the world and then back into the world, and then now one of the great ambassadors to the game through limited resources and constructed resources, etc. The podcaster rightfully kind of let him just kind of talk, and he has such great stories to share. So if you're looking for a couple hours to kill, got a long car ride, I definitely would say that. Just gives you that sense of nostalgia and just what a great personality Marshall is and how lucky we are to have him in the booth. The second one was I had finished my Legacy playing with Sean over the weekend, where I was trying out this headset, and my 11-year-old daughter wanders down to the basement and was kind of like, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm just kind of got my blue-red Delver deck out, and I'm just kind of seeing if all the pieces fit together. And she says, oh, kind of like Tetris. And I started to think about that because she and I play Tetris on the iPad sometimes. And I'm like, yeah, it's kind of like Tetris. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And she's like, what do you mean? I said, no, all the things have to fit together. Because I was starting to contemplate this card and that card and maybe not this and maybe not that and what's some spicy tech I can use. And I'm thinking, no. If this deck does what it's supposed to do, it needs to fit together like Tetris. If it fits in the slots, that's exactly what your deck does. And you know what? It might not win 100% of the time, but you should do your deck well, and it should fit together. It shouldn't be a big mashup like Jeff Hoogland does every week with some new modern brew that he does. God bless him, he does well with them. But man, I like a finely tuned deck list. And so thank you, Clara, for coming down to the basement and giving your old man some advice.
You're in trouble now, because she's already cute at 11. And if she's smart, too, yeah, you're gonna have a lot of work to do as dad. So congratulations for raising a smart child. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
So I got to watch that draft, which, you know, was fine. I got to tear into a ton of podcasts because I spent a lot of windshield time this week. I got thinking they released the pre-release link this week for tournament we're playing at Moonbase Magic in St. Louis. And so I'm like, you know what, guys, what am I actually going to play? So I've been looking through everything, and, you know, the Carnage Tyrant is still at the top of the list. But the other one I'm looking at, I kind of got into another discussion with Booze Cube on Twitter. And I'm like, do I want to play, or do I want to see if I can borrow Candelabras from somebody since I no longer have them, and maybe play a little mono green 12 post? So it's a possibility if I could find somebody to borrow some candelabras from. That may happen, but I was doing a lot of thinking about what deck I actually want to play going down to Moonbase Magic.
March 10th, St. Louis. We'll be there. Check it out. Jeremy Aronson, who's been on the cast before, he is helping to put this together. It'll be a great event. He always runs great events. Thank you for running across this episode of Tryhards. May your Pro Tour picks fare better than ours will. We'll check in on what that reality looks like next week. Oh, you brave soul, spending time with us here on Tryhards.